afternoon, Mr. Kaler.
Good afternoon. I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, my name is Matt Kaler. I'm here on behalf of Nicole Winther, who is the mother of the children in interest in this case, whose rights have been terminated by the juvenile court. In my time today, I want to address two of the main arguments that the juvenile court relied on heavily in making the decision to terminate my client's rights. The first issue being whether or not my client was failing to protect her children. Second of all, the argument that my client failed to participate in services with the juvenile court. With respect to the failure to protect argument, if the court looks back to July of 2010, at that point this case had been open a while. There was one child that was still a state ward at that point. Another child had never been filed on, still resided with my client. The child that was a state ward was placed with my client. And the third child, who was the child that ended up being injured that same month, was placed with a father who had a visitation with my client. The testimony during the termination trial is that the parties were in agreement to close out the case in July of 2010. Due to my client's progress, she had participated in all the services, and this case is ready to be closed out. Unfortunately, at that point, her child was injured. And the juvenile court made two specific findings with respect to those injuries. First of all, that my client's ex-boyfriend had caused the injuries. And second of all, that my client had allowed the children to have contact with this ex-boyfriend after the injuries had occurred. First of all, even my client testified that it was her understanding that her ex-boyfriend was arrested for the assault, but she was never informed of what had happened with the conviction and with the actual case. There was no conviction offered into evidence. But the argument, the finding that this ex-boyfriend had contact with the children is completely unsupported by the evidence. The only testimony that was given about any contact or any allegation of contact after the injuries occurred was by Rochelle Barcel, a former caseworker, who testified that it was her understanding there was an allegation that maybe my client had some contact, but admitted it was completely uncorroborated by the evidence. There were no witnesses, no other evidence that occurred. There was never any allegation that the children were present for any of these alleged contacts, for which there's no proof anyway. So I do take issue with that finding of the court, and I think that's a significant finding, because obviously if my client did allow the children to be in the presence of this person that had caused a significant injury, that would be, in my opinion, a reason to support the state's allegations. But there's no evidence to that degree.
Wasn't one of the problems here, though, was even after your client was informed of these allegations, she continued to allow the children to be around this guy and did not err on the side of caution and try to protect these children.
The evidence was that in July, up to July 2010, this individual, the ex-boyfriend, had been approved by all the caseworkers to be present during family team meetings and during visits. Multiple witnesses testified that he was appropriate around the children. He was approved by all parties.
That changed, though, didn't it?
And then once in July, the children were immediately removed from my client, once the injuries occurred, but there were no visits that took place after July where this individual was present. There was no testimony to that effect. The testimony was that Mr. Manzer, the ex-boyfriend, was present during a family team meeting after July 2010, the very next one that occurred. I don't believe there's any testimony that the children were present. I don't believe they were present.
And that was after the allegations had been made against him, correct?
Correct. He was present at a family team meeting, not a visit with the children.
So in essence, your client was pretty much siding with him and not with the children at that
point. At that point, that was before he was arrested. My client maintained under testimony and her statements to the caseworkers that she did give different possible causes for the injuries, but there was never any evidence that she was present when the injuries occurred, that she knew exactly how the injuries occurred. And I asked multiple witnesses those questions to clarify that there was this inclination of the caseworkers that my client was covering up for her boyfriend, but after he was arrested for the assault, which I believe was in either late August or early September of 2010, there's no evidence of any contact between my client and her ex-boyfriend by any means, whether it be written, telephone, physical contact, nothing. The only evidence was that she did that first initial month before he was arrested for the assault, he was present for one family team meeting, and that's it.
And her explanation was falling off monkey bars and falling in a bathtub, correct? And there was no evidence to support that either.
Well, she was asked for it. She took the child to the hospital, and was when she was asked how it occurred, she gave two possible explanations. She was never, I understand the court's concern with that, that she wasn't able to give a definitive explanation, but again, there's no evidence that she knows how that this occurred. She was not, even though there was testimony that she had agreed to testify for the prosecution in their prosecution of him, there's no evidence that she knew anything about how the injuries occurred, more that she'd be able to establish that he was the caretaker at the time that the injuries occurred. Beyond even this ex-boyfriend, there's an allegation that my client allowed inappropriate people to be around her children. It came down to two visits at a college campus that when the visits were not allowed at my client's home, where the person that transported my client to the visit was a student there and was present on campus. And the visitation workers testified that they never had to end a visit early because of this person, that both times he was asked to leave, and he did. But there was quite a bit of testimony that my client allowed these inappropriate people to be around the kids even after this July 2010 incident. That's it. Those two visits where the person dropped off my client at a campus where he was a
student. And am I recalling correctly that that individual was a sex offender?
I don't believe so. I think that there was a background check. He wasn't a sex offender, but there was a background check where I don't believe, due to felony convictions, I don't believe it was a sex offense.
Okay. Right.
He wasn't allowed to be around the children. He was not part of those visits after that. But it is still our contention that the findings of the court are incorrect. This ex-boyfriend, again, was not present around these children after that July incident. And up to that point, he was approved by everyone to be around. So again, I believe that flies in the face of this failure to protect argument that my client was allowing these people that shouldn't have been around children to be around them. There's no indication she should have known.
I think what I was remembering was there apparently was something in 2007 where she had left Landon with a caregiver who they later learned was a sex offender.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's true. And that was the reason there was so much concern about this particular incident in July, this ex-boyfriend, because she had, when this case began back in 2007, it had to do with inappropriate people being around her children.
Can we shift you to best interest?
Yes. I believe this case, more so than really any other juvenile case I've dealt with, hinged on the relationship between my client and the various caseworkers in this case, especially Ms. Parcell, who was the main witness that testified for the state. There's no question that my client was difficult to get along with. Her relationship with the caseworkers was not a good one. But I do believe that due to that relationship, there were several roadblocks that were put in her way. The psychological services, again, they stopped paying for psychiatric services in September 2011 unilaterally. There was no court order for them that they didn't have to provide those services. They knew at that time that my client was an attendant in a parking lot, made very limited income, could not afford to pay for these services by herself, but she started paying different percentages of the fees for the psychiatric services after having everything paid for before, and then in September 2011 they simply stopped paying. Now initially my client did not want to see anyone else other than Dr. Sitar, which again the first witness that testified, Dr. Filchek, testified that my client has significant trust issues and there were these diagnoses that would suggest that she should stay with the same providers. She did eventually agree to go see someone at Capstone, which is where she's seen the same therapist for all these years. But the reason that she wasn't provided those services is, according to the current caseworker, there was a glitch in the system that where the referral didn't show up for several months. And once it did show up, they went ahead and canceled it because my client hadn't taken advantage of it. That makes no sense. Dr. Connor, with that same agency, testified that in their system, they never showed any referral for my client to begin the psychiatric services with them. But and again, the caseworker's explanation is that there's a glitch.
Was your client given information about where else to obtain medication and psychiatric services that would allow her to pay less or not pay for those services?
Dr. Sitar did testify that he did provide my client with information on alternatives, which normally I agree could be held against a parent for not taking advantage of those. Again, this is a person that's evident from the record. Her relationships with certain people, her trust issues, made it a little more difficult for her to just simply move from one person to the next to provide services. But when she did participate again, she was consistent with Dr. Sitar, continued to be consistent with Dr. Connor. Everything else that they used against her, including she's had stable housing, she's had stable employment, that some of these issues were caused by the fact she had limited funds, which by the time of the termination came about, there was testimony and paychecks offered in evidence that her income increased significantly in the couple months leading up to that termination. That wouldn't be a factor at this time. I believe I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Clark.
Good afternoon. If it pleases the court, Jennifer Clark, Deputy County Attorney with Douglas County, here for the appellee. In regards to this case, I think the evidence is very clear. This mother had been offered services for over 4 years. Not only was she offered services once Landon was removed, she was offered additional services with Vincent in 2009. And then, as the record is very clear, she worked with those services. She did what was necessary to improve her life, to improve the lives of her children. Landon went with his father, but she did have Naomi. She gave birth to Naomi. The Department of Health and Human Services did not see it necessary to remove Naomi in 2010. And decided that the mother had made significant effort to actually have her children returned. So the record is clear that this mother can do what she needed to do. It's not about trust. It's about how this mother perceives how everyone looks at her. And that's very clear in regards to the testimony from Dr. Vilcek and from Dr. Sitar. She has an antisocial personality disorder and a borderline personality disorder, which clearly states that she is willing to put her needs above her own, above anybody else's needs, to include her own children. Dr. Fielchuk even testified that could hinder an individual's ability to parent. The mother had been offered services for a long time. She knows the services that she needed. She knew that she had psychological issues, that she needed to have medication, and she had worked with those issues up until 2010 when Vincent was returned to her. And the court was looking at terminating the court's jurisdiction. The mother had done it. And then the horrific incident that occurred with Landon. As the court's already aware, she gave two different explanations. The young child, Landon, was actually in a room with department workers talking to him about what had gone on. He clearly states that it was the boyfriend. It was.
Did you say mother was present during
that? No, the department workers with Landon, because Landon wouldn't say anything in the presence of his mother. Mm-hmm. He, in fact, said something when it was without the mother being there, that what had happened to him in regards to the injuries that Steve Manzer had inflicted upon him. That information was presented to the mother, and her reaction was, no, he didn't hurt him. Her reaction was it had to be the monkey bars, he had to slip in the tub. Those injuries were not consistent with any of those explanations, and she was told that repeatedly, that this individual had hurt her child and that she needed to make steps in order to protect her children. Just as she was told to make steps back in 2008 when she left Landon with a sex offender. So she was fully aware of what she needed to do in order to protect her children.
Was there evidence in the record that she exposed any of the children to this ex-boyfriend following the incident with Landon?
No. No definitive evidence.
But she continued to have...
But she continued.
A relationship with.
That is correct. There is evidence to show that she, at one point, still had Mr. Manzer in her home, that he did attend the family team meeting. I know that the department workers, the caseworkers testified that they had told her she needed to get a protection order in order to protect herself and her children from this abuse. It took a year and a half for that protection order to even be done. I also want to point out that it's not just failure to protect in regards to Mr. Manzer. It's the mother's inability to protect her children from safety all around. We're talking about when the caseworker went to her home, she had gasoline sitting in the kitchen. And the worker said, you know, ma'am, that's not the most appropriate place to have that. You need to make sure that that's out of the way of the children. And she didn't think it was a big deal because the kids don't go in there. The worker's like, she didn't understand this because she lived in an apartment and she didn't have to take care of lawn. So she wasn't sure why the gasoline was even in there. There's also evidence, as noted during appellant, is that she had an individual who dropped her off on a campus and who happened to be present during the course of visitation. However, This mother had been repeatedly told time and time again, you are not to have anyone present during the course of your visitation unless they are pre-approved. Her mother had been pre-approved and her sisters had been pre-approved. No one else. But yet this individual appeared at least twice in regards to that, in complete violation of what she was told not to do. This mother continuously kept pushing the limits of trying to make it that she can call the shots, basically. I know that the appellant's attorney is trying to say that it's, you know, she has trust issues. You gotta give her a break, essentially. This woman did not have trust issues. This woman wanted to maintain control in regards to this, in regards to her children, in regards to her case, and she wanted to be able to tell people what to do. In regards to the services that were offered, Dr. Sitar did testify in regards to what needed to be done in order to continue with her psychiatric care. She didn't want to do it. She wanted someone else to pay for it. In regards to therapy services, they were inconsistent and she didn't follow through.
Was there evidence that she could afford to pay for Dr. Sitar on her own?
The evidence showed that she could not afford to pay for Dr. Sitar.
So why would the caseworker have discontinued her access to Dr. Sitar after a number of years?
I believe there actually was evidence that they said that they were still willing to pay for Dr. Sitar. I believe, if I remember correctly, there was testimony by one of the caseworkers that they were actually still willing to pay for Dr. Sitar. Unfortunately, she wasn't utilizing a lot of that information.
But she had consistently seen him from 2007 till September of 2011 at the time that she was told by the caseworker that she would have to pay for that herself. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. But I think, Your Honor, that you have to also look at the fact that these individuals have to start demonstrating an ability to take care of themselves. Being so dependent on the Department of Health and Human Services and the people of the state of Nebraska in regards to these services, she knows what she needed to do in regards to paying for things and what she needed to do in regards to a budget. That was one of the concerns of two different caseworkers, is that this mother would refuse to do a budget for what was necessary. In her own testimony, she testified to what she would spend her money on when she testified in court. She had tattoos all over her body. She acknowledged that she was a smoker and that she was willing to spend money in regards to that habit. But she refused to budget and refused to make the efforts to realize what are priorities.
Was there any evidence that her behaviors as a parent were any different when she was under the care of Dr. Sitar versus when she stopped treating with him in September of 2011? Did she get worse?
In regards to her parenting when it was a supervised visitation, I don't recall anything in regards to where they felt the children were at risk because of her behavior. I will say, though, that a lot of her behavior outside was very concerning in regards to her language, her way that her emotions would turn in regards to anything. When the judge had ruled that Landon was to go with his father in regards to full custody, she literally had a mental breakdown, and she called up the family support worker, visitation worker. She couldn't get a hold of the caseworker. Her behavior was very erratic. Even the father of Landon testified as to she would call him up quite a bit. He'd have to cut off conversations with her on the phone because he never would able to get her to calm down. So he even testified. So it wasn't just caseworkers that this mother had problems with. It was anyone who seemed to stand in her way in regards to anything that she wanted.
Those behaviors, though, was there evidence to correspond to when she was or wasn't taking the medication? Do we know that for sure?
Well, Your Honor, Landon was injured in 2010. Mm-hmm. She was still under the care of Dr. Sitar, and as pointed out, until the end of 2011. So she's still having these behaviors regardless of the fact that she was under psychiatric care and receiving psychiatric medication. Your Honors, I know my time is up, it's getting there, so I kind of wanted to wrap up in regards to best interest and the fact that the state did prove that services were offered, reasonable efforts were given, that this mother failed to follow those services, and that these children do not need to await parental maturity as in Sunshine A in order to return back to their mother's care. This mother failed to demonstrate progress. She failed to demonstrate an ability to put her children's needs above her own. As clearly stated in In Re Interest of B&B, A parent's lack of motivation to place his child's interest above his own can constitute substantial, continual, and repeated neglect. In the interest of Clifford M., also notes a parent's effort and progress. This mother has demonstrated that she is not willing to provide the effort needed in order to have her children returned. She can. Clearly shows in the record that she was able to do it before. Why she was unable to do it at this next time, is the state does not understand. She was under the psychiatric care of Dr. Sitara until the end of 2011. This was filed about roughly around 2012, so it's not just that time frame when the psychiatric services were supposedly not given, or that the mother failed to make that additional effort to get psychiatric care on her own, but it also shows that during that entire time, she was unwilling to make that leap of faith in order to be a parent. Also, I want to note to the court that in her own testimony at the trial, this mother noted that she still did not know where her child landed.
With regard to Landon, there's evidence that he's gone to the custody of his biological father, correct? Should that have any impact on the matter of termination of her rights as to him, given that biological dad now has custody?
Your Honor, the father has a difficult time, and as noted by the fact that Landon was allowed to actually be with the mother while he had full custody for the month of when he was injured, he has a difficult time saying no to the mother. So I don't think it should have an impact. I inquired of this father before I filed the termination against Landon because he had already been out of the court's jurisdiction. We were going to have to adjudicate him. And he wanted this done because this way then the mother could not continuously pursue custody and continuously harass him in regards to his son.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
How much time of rebuttal? There is none. How much did we take her over? You want a minute for a rebuttal?
Thank you. Just a couple things I want to address briefly. With respect to Dr. Sitara, the psychiatrist, the testimony from the caseworker was that she had decided to no longer pay for services, psychiatric services, after September 2011. And there was absolutely no testimony that they were willing to pay for any psychiatric services from Dr. Sitara after that. Now, from September 2011 to February 2012, there are absolutely no referrals for psychiatric services. Carissa Nielsen, the caseworker, testified in February 2012 was when that referral went out that never appeared in the Capstone system. The other thing I want to point out, that Dr. Filicek had testified that that Ms. Winther's prognosis went from good to guarded when the psychiatric services stopped due to her behaviors at that time. So that's the court take that into consideration. And I do believe that the custody order should have an impact here because that custody order allows my client to only have visitation when it's supervised. And regardless of the father's ability or inability to quote-unquote control my client, I do think that should be factored into best interest because I don't think there isn't a need to terminate that relationship for permanency for this child.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.
You.
You're both excused. Thank you. We are adjourned.